It's Thursday, March 10th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Canada's new prime minister arrives at the White House for a state visit. Iran's foreign ministry says its missile tests do not violate the international nuclear deal. We get reaction.
If you notice what they actually said, they said that this is outside of the range of the pact. And strictly speaking, they could be correct, but it is well within range of Security Council resolutions that go back as far as 10 or 20 years.
And we'll hear Canadian singer Alicia Cara's latest single, Wild Things. It's all ahead. Well, the Canadian flag is joining the flag of the United States, the Stars and Stripes, because Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has arrived at the White House, where he was greeted by President Barack Obama. I'm joined now by VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey. Well, Aru, this visit is certainly getting a lot of attention for a Canadian Prime Minister. What are some of the items on the agenda that the two leaders will be discussing?
Well, first of all, it's getting a lot of attention because this is the first such state visit by a Canadian leader to the White House in 19 years, so you can imagine. And then this is the new Canadian Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, who's said to be a young, you know, version of Barack Obama. Trudeau won an election based on a campaign of hope and change with very similar parallels to how President Obama came to office here in the United States. So there's a lot of excitement surrounding that. But at the same time, like you said, there is a hefty agenda to talk about during the state visit and some of the key issues that they're going to touch on during talks include climate change, boosting trade, and also the fight against the Islamic State militant group in Syria and Iraq.
And what about discussions about the migrant crisis?
Well, obviously that has garnered a good amount of attention, especially with the Canadian Prime Minister's approach to it. I mean, just months into taking office, he was seen at the airport in Canada, in Toronto, greeting Syrian refugees as they came off the plane. So he's been very out front, and I think Canada has met its goal of admitting 25,000 Syrian refugees into the United States, and some have contrasted that with the United States, with some of the politicians in the U.S., saying they're not okay with Syrian refugees coming in. So they've contrasted the policy between the U.S. and Canada in this regard. That, of course, is going to be an issue that's going to be talked about, the Syrian crisis in general. And U.S. officials, including President Obama, have praised Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau for the reception and for the assistance that Canada has offered to Syrian refugees and the humanitarian effort that they've contributed and also the military contributions that they've made in the fight against the Islamic State.
Well, now, it won't be all work because tonight there's going to be a state dinner. I'm sure there's quite a bit of interest in that.
There is, as there always is. They've already unveiled the menu with, you know, some Canadian takes. You know, you have Canadian whiskey and maple playing a role on the menu. And then, of course, you'll have the two first ladies, Michelle Obama and Gregoire Trudeau here. So there's always an anticipation of what, I hate to say, what the first ladies will be wearing and obviously the decor. This will be the 10th state dinner of President Obama's time here, and it'll be the first for a Canadian head of state since 1997.
Should be very interesting. Well, thanks a lot. That is VOA White House correspondent Aru Pandey.
Thank you.
Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's some of the reaction on social media to all this?
Well, it's kind of all over the place. The only thing I think that's unifying it is hashtag Canada Visit, which is the one that most people seem to be using. But you have, on the one hand, a lot of the policy issues being discussed, a lot of people praising on social media President Obama and Prime Minister Trudeau for their work in agreement with climate change, saying that's a very important issue that they should be tackling. But on the other hand, a lot of people saying the U.S. needs to follow Canada's example and do more for refugees. Canada's been taking in a lot of Syrian refugees, and a lot of people are unhappy on social media that the U.S. hasn't been following suit. So you have the policy kind of debate going on. Then you have the issue of civility in politics, saying, look at how well these two young leaders get along. If only our political system in the U.S. could maybe borrow some of that. Maybe people, sounds like they're frustrated with some of the current political discourse in the presidential race, perhaps. And then, of course, it's the style. It's, you know, Justin Trudeau is a very handsome man, so a lot of people commenting on that on social media. But his family is, you know, several young kids. His wife is very beautiful, so a lot of, you know, what a great charismatic and good-looking leader to have at the White House with President Obama. And then, of course, as Aru mentioned, the state dinner tonight is the talk of social media. Mostly people asking, how do I get tickets, or why wasn't I invited? But a lot of interest in who will be invited, as well as the food and what people will be wearing. People pointing out that The Weeknd, the singer-songwriter, who is Canadian, his parents are actually Ethiopian immigrants to Canada. He'll be in attendance tonight. So a little bit of star watching, a little bit of excitement for that. But it generally seems to be kind of a feel-good trip for Prime Minister Trudeau. Everyone seems to be reacting positively for the most part on social media. Of course, you always have the detractors on both sides, President Obama's opponents, Prime Minister Trudeau's opponents. But by and large, among the general social media conversation, it's being received positively.
All right, thanks very much. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
European Space Agency's Laser Interferometer Space Antenna, or LISA Pathfinder, launched last December, recently started its science mission after completing an intensive three-month testing period. The LISA Pathfinder's job is to test and establish crucial technologies and techniques that would make it possible for a future observatory to detect and study gravitational waves in outer space. To help lay the groundwork, ESA scientists will create a near-perfect freefall with two identical gold-platinum cubes inside the spacecraft. In such a freefall, the cubes must remain perfectly still. ESA is working to create conditions that would ensure only the force of a gravitational wave could cause them to wiggle about. Over the next half year, the ESA scientists will try different ways to move the cubes and then experiment with various technologies that will help keep them in perfect freefall. I am VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Canadian singer Alicia Cara has a new single called Wild Things. Iran's foreign ministry says its missile tests do not violate the international nuclear deal reached last year. A spokesman is quoted by state media as saying they are conventional defensive instruments. He also said they do not violate a UN Security Council resolution. Meanwhile, a senior commander of the Revolutionary Guards Corps say the country's missile program will never stop under any circumstances, adding that the Guard has never accepted the UN Security Council resolutions on Iran's missile work. Iran test-fired several missiles Tuesday and Wednesday. White House spokesman Josh Earnest told reporters Wednesday the U.S. will take a close look at the launches.
Unfortunately, Iran's insistence on developing a ballistic missile program outside of widely recognized international standards is a longstanding concern, not just of the United States, but of the international community. It is, in fact, one of the reasons that the United States led the way to develop, negotiate, and implement a diplomatic agreement to prevent Iran from obtaining nuclear weapons. The reason that was significant is we know that Iran is working aggressively to try to enhance their ballistic missile capability. And preventing them from being able to nuclearize their missiles is obviously important to our national security here in the United States. It's also important to the national security of our allies and partners in the region. But we will continue to redouble our efforts with our allies and partners in the region to try to limit Iran's ability to continue to develop their missile program outside of international conventions.
The White House spokesman said there is more that can be done to enforce existing sanctions and interdict shipments of equipment and materials related to the missile program. Washington imposed sanctions on several entities and individuals following a missile test in October. Foreign policy professor Jonathan Adelman of the University of Denver tells International Edition's Victor Beatty these latest tests are a discouraging development.
On one hand, we were encouraged by the election results, despite the fact that they took thousands of moderates and wouldn't let them run. All 30 reformers won in Tehran. They did well in the big cities. That was a victory, we could say, for the people who wanted the pact. But when they hear this kind of thing, it sounds like kind of like the French say, plus ça change, plus ça reste le même. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And the elite is clearly reading into it. And if you notice what they actually said, they said that this is outside of the range of the pact. And strictly speaking, they could be correct, but it is well within range of Security Council resolutions that go back as far as 10 or 20 years. So I think it's not clear what the outcome is going to be, but this is very discouraging because we'd hope that they would move in a more moderate direction under Rouhani.
Do you anticipate more ballistic missile tests?
Absolutely. The Iranians are doing this because they want to show that the Shiites are going to dominate the Middle East. And what you see is countries like Egypt and Saudi Arabia that have scarcely been friendly to the Israelis, like the Jordanians have, they're now becoming very openly friendly because they're terrified. They don't have the military capability by themselves to develop nuclear weapons or advanced technology without the help of the United States or some other advanced first world countries.
That's Jonathan Adelman of the University of Denver and regional analyst Anthony Billingsley of the University of New South Wales in Australia says these tests are a sign of the ongoing struggle in Iran between hardliners and more moderate factions.
And I think it's very much a domestic issue with the right-wingers determined, if they can, to remind the leadership that they haven't gone away, that they still have considerable power. This is a very provocative act that they've done. The question of its legality in terms of the UN Security Council resolutions is debatable because the Council rescinded most of the sanctions that had been imposed before and basically only ask or call on Iran not to engage in any ballistic activity.
Israel has to be concerned about this latest development because it appears to be the target of such tests.
We're not talking about nuclear-tipped missiles. We're talking about missiles with conventional capacity. And while I wouldn't want to downplay that, nobody wants to have something like that land in their city. They're not as significant as, say, a nuclear weapon. But yes, they are there to provoke the Israelis. The other point, of course, is that they're also there to remind the Saudis that their position is not entirely secure either, because Saudis are well within range of these missiles.
Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jubeir told reporters Wednesday in Riyadh that the kingdom and other Gulf states could turn a page and improve relations with Tehran if it changes its ways and its policies. He mentioned Iran's support for terrorism and implanting terrorist cells in the countries of the region. The Saudis cut all ties with Tehran in January. One of the U.S. Republican Party's leading voices on foreign affairs says the civil war in Syria and the flow of migrants into Europe together constitute one of the most serious crises the West has faced in the last 70 years. Republican Senator John McCain is currently the chairman of the Senate Committee on Armed Services. He was his party's presidential nominee in 2008. McCain spoke with VOA's Milena Djurdjic.
How do you see solving of the migrant crisis which is affecting Serbia, especially with closing the routes, with a deal between EU and Turkey, which many say are worried that it might actually hurt human rights of the refugees? How do you see that going forward, and how's U.S. going to help with resolving that issue?
Honestly, I'm not sure how well we are handling it or can handle it. It's more of a European problem. We should help with humanitarian, with all of the other aspects of handling the crisis itself. But the source of the crisis, which of course we know is from Syria and other countries, including, by the way, a very large number of Afghans, is a result of the conflicts. And the United States' failure in Syria and Iraq has had a significant impact on the cause of the flow of refugees. If the United States had gotten rid of Bashar Assad and kept Iraq under control, we wouldn't be experiencing the refugee crisis that we are today. So therefore, it seems to me the United States should have an obligation to try to help out as much as possible with the results of our failures.
At the same time, NATO is accusing Russia of, as they say, weaponizing the migrant crisis in order to destabilize European Union. What's your take on it?
General Breedlove, who is our military commander in Europe, testified before our committee that, yes, Russia is weaponizing the refugee crisis and attempting to break up the entire European Union, which is not beyond imagination. And again, the United States of America, by our failure to lead, allowed Russia into a position of influence in the Middle East for the first time since 1973, when Anwar Sadat threw the Russians out of Egypt. So the predominant influence now is in Syria, is Russia, Hezbollah, Iran, and various other factions that are now dominating and establishing themselves in a way that it's very unlikely that Bashar Assad will ever leave anytime soon. This is one of the most serious crises that Europe and the United States have seen since the end of World War II.
Senator John McCain, chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, he spoke with VOA's Milena Jurjic. This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
Hi, my name's Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings, your request and dedication program here at the Voice of America. 1500 Universal, Monday through Friday, we're there for an hour playing your favorite music. You can send an email in and request your favorite songs by your favorite artists. You can also phone in as well. We have great contests and surprise guests from time to time. Border Crossings, every single day during the week at 1500 Universal, here on the Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Well, International Edition's Ira Melman and VOA Music's Larry London get together to talk about the success of Canadian singer Alicia Cara.
Larry London is here, host of Border Crossings on VOA, and he is highlighting, throwing the spotlight on a young singer from north of our border here in the United States. Larry?
That's right. Alicia Cara is her name. She's from Brampton, Ontario, Canada. At the tender age of 19, she scored her very first hit last year in 2015 with the song Here, which is off of her debut album, Know It All. And what teenager doesn't think they know it all? Now, Alicia has been posting videos on YouTube since she was 13, another singer-songwriter who became famous through social media. And she got signed to a contract. She performed her song Here on stage with Taylor Swift. She said that was the aha moment for her, joining Taylor Swift during the 1989 tour at Taylor's invitation in front of 50,000 people who all knew the lyrics to the song Here. Well, now she's back with her second single.
And I just want to go back for a second, because this is not the first time Taylor Swift has done something like this, right?
That's right. Taylor, on her 1989 tour, was inviting all kinds of guests, people from talk shows like Ellen to sports celebrities like Derek Jeter to many, many different singers as well. And Alicia Cara was one of the lucky ones who got invited to perform at one of Taylor's shows. And she said that's the highlight of her career so far.
If you were to pin her down to a certain kind of style, how would you describe it?
She is a pop rock kind of singer. She's gritty. She's much like a Bonnie Raitt or a Bonnie Tyler in that style and that sound. I like her lyrics. They're very real. They're very refreshing. The song Here was inspired by a party she attended with a bunch of friends, one of those parties we've all been at, which just was kind of like boring and dull, and why are we here?
That's at least the ones we want to talk
about.
That's
the ones we throw. But now she's got a great thing out, which is called Wild Things, which is totally opposite of a dull and boring party.
Is it the same kind of style as the first one was?
It's different, but it's still Alicia Cara. It's still, you know, a raspy, gritty style of singing that she has. And at 19, she's well on her way. She's going to have a bright career. And this album is very exciting. I've heard the album. I really like the album, Know It All.
Doesn't it surprise you, or doesn't it amaze you, I should say anyway, that somebody who's 19 years old can have the insight to come up with good lyrics?
And you know what? If you watch these reality music shows, you're finding that more and more of these tremendously talented people are young, like on the current season of American Idol. They have 4 or 5 15-year-old contestants, which is just amazing how these people, I mean, when I was 15, I didn't know what end was up. So, you know, these people are so talented, and she's receiving all kinds of nominations for award shows. She's up for several Juno Awards. She's up for Radio Disney Music Award and a Kids' Choice Award for Favorite New Artist. So she's hot on the scene right now. She's definitely somebody to watch.
More power to her. And Larry London, once again, as always, we thank you.
Thank you, Ira.
That's Alicia Cara and her new song, Wild Things. Well, that's our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Human rights abuses in Russia under President Vladimir Putin have deteriorated significantly in the last year, said Deputy Assistant Secretary for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor, Rob Bershinsky. The Russian government has stepped up efforts to suppress political opposition, suffocate civil society, silence independent voices, and stigmatize members of minority groups. The list of non-governmental organizations that have been designated as so-called foreign agents has risen to over 120, including the Committee of Soldiers' Mothers, the election monitoring group Golos, and human rights organization Memorial. The Undesirable Foreign Organizations Law, introduced last May, has already led to the banning of 4 significant foreign donor organizations and a decision by 2 foundations that were major funders of Russian civil society to cease their operations there. Pressure also continues on independent media outlets. The national blacklist of blocked websites is growing, and state propaganda is becoming more virulent. Those who attempt to speak out against these alarming trends or question government policy, especially regarding Russia's aggression in Ukraine, are subject to harassment, prosecution, and physical threats. Late last year, a court sentenced activist Ildar Dadin to 3 years in prison for participation in peaceful protest. The climate of impunity in Russia has deepened, said Deputy Assistant Secretary Bershinsky. While arrests have been made in the murder case of opposition leader Boris Nemtsov, the organizers of this crime have yet to be brought to justice. The best way to honor the memory of Mr. Nemtsov, said Deputy Assistant Secretary Bershinsky, is to support human rights, democratic principles in Russia, and international norms. The Obama administration will continue to uphold those norms. Sanctions will remain in place for Russia's aggression in eastern Ukraine until Russia fulfills its commitments under the Minsk agreements. And the sanctions imposed on Russia for its occupation of Crimea will remain in place until that occupation has ended. In addition, the United States will continue to speak out publicly against repressive laws and practices in Russia that impede the work of civil society and independent media. The United States will also continue to hold Russians accountable for their roles in the imprisonment and death of Sergei Magnitsky and other gross violations of human rights. It is in America's interest to see a strong, prosperous, and democratic Russia emerge, a Russia that can be a reliable partner in support of global peace, the type of Russian dream to which Boris Nemtsov and many other activists have devoted their lives.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.